and interestingly about its gates. And so we can now speak of the prophetic insights of Brother Bean, because I'm sure I didn't show him anything, so he must have known that I was gonna say something about that. Now, we're gonna look at the story of Nehemiah, and I would like to draw some parallels from it, and I hope that at the end you will grasp what I intend to show you. Now, in Nehemiah, and we begin right at chapter 1. In Nehemiah chapter 1, we have Nehemiah is the cupbearer in the Persian kingdom. Artaxerxes is the king. And a number of the Jews are returning from exile. If we remember, they would have been taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar, and so they are returning from exile. So Nehemiah sees some of his brethren, Nehemiah chapter 1, and we look at verse 2. He sees some of his brethren, and he inquired about Jerusalem. So in Nehemiah chapter 1 and verse 2,
that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem.
And concerning Jerusalem, verse chapter 2, verse 3 to 5.
And said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad, when the city, this place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, for what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said unto the king, if it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the cities of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it.
Verse 17, same chapter 2.
Then said I unto them, Yea, see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come, and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach.
If you were to choose to title the sermon, you could choose to title it, come, let us build the walls of Jerusalem. Nehemiah's deep concern was for Jerusalem. The Jews returning, yes, but for Jerusalem. Why Jerusalem? Why is Nehemiah so concerned about Jerusalem? Nehemiah decided that he wants to rebuild Jerusalem. And this is why he's now concerned. Now, let us look at this place, Jerusalem, so we get to understand. Now, in Jerusalem is considered the city of peace. It is God's holy hill, according to Psalm 2, verse 6, 2 Samuel 5, verse 7 to 9, says it is a city of David. It is the dwelling place of God, 2 Samuel 6, verse 16, Psalm 76, verse 2. The throne of Jesus Christ in a kingdom without end, Luke chapter 7, 31 to 32. Jerusalem is important, because it is, and I put it to you, God's dwelling place. Second Samuel 6 verse 16. So Nehemiah is concerned about Jerusalem. I would say it is the city of peace. It is God's dwelling. You have that? Second Samuel? Second Samuel 6:16.
As the Ark of the Lord came to the city of David, Michal's daughter looked through a window and saw King
you
David.
You can stop there, yes. David was dancing to make Michal jealous. But importantly is that the Ark came into the city of David. It came into Jerusalem. What is the Ark? The Ark is God's what? Is where Christ dwells, where God meets with the. It is what? It is what symbolizes the presence of God. Oh no, look so, no remember that. Come on, we have built something, man. Come with me, man. We don't remember that, or we need to go back. Tell me now. So the ark represents, is that it represents? Represents God. Psalm 76, verse 2.
In Salem also is his tabernacle and his dwelling place in Zion.
So what we have is Salem, which is the same what? Jerusalem is his what?
Tabernacle.
Is his tabernacle. What is that? The place where we worship God, and is what?
His dwelling place.
His dwelling place, and that same place is called what? Same place is Zion. Is it? That's what it says?
Yes.
Zion. So, Brother Bean was singing of Zion. It's the same place. What we're establishing is that it's a city of peace. It is God's dwelling place. It's the tabernacle. Right? We got all of that? Remember, we're building something. We're taking half the time to build this side. And then we pull the parallels on the other side. So, Nehemiah is asking, is concerned about what? Jerusalem. This place which is God's dwelling, the tabernacle, the city of peace. And if we were to ask the question, Nehemiah, why? Mark you, who is Nehemiah? Nehemiah is a high officer in the Persian kingdom, the king's cupbearer. Not even the queen comes as close to the cupbearer. Why? Because that is the person who does that. Who literally guards the menu, the king's meals. So if you want to poison the king, you make friend with the cupbearer. So Nehemiah, a very high office. If we were to read further on in each of the later chapters, we realize the kind of official he was. For this lesson, we won't get so far. Now, Nehemiah is concerned about Jerusalem. Let's see how concerned he was. Let's read Nehemiah chapter 1 verse 9. Nehemiah 1 verse 4.
And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept.
Did what? Nehemiah, when he heard about Jerusalem, he wept. Right? And continue.
And mourned certain.
Mourned. And what?
And mourned certain days, and fasted, and prayed before the God of heaven.
Listen verse 5.
And said, I beseech thee, O Lord, God of heaven, the great and terrible God, that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments.
Now Nehemiah continues with that weeping and pouring out himself before God all the way to the end of verse 1. Keep praying. Now Nehemiah is so different in his outlook, his composure, that in verse 2, when he comes to the king says to him, in verse 2, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. So when the king look at him, said, no man, something wrong here, sir, man, not just little bit wrong, something terribly wrong, and even know you're not sick.
So it must be deep sorrow. So Nehemiah had deep sorrow, right? And this is all for Jerusalem. Deep sorrow. And we just read a while that he explained to the king, how can I be happy when Jerusalem is broken down? The walls, the gates are broken. How can I be comfortable? How can I be happy when this is the news coming about God's dwelling place? God's holy hill, God's tabernacle. How can I really sit and be happy? So we find out that Nehemiah was affected, sorrow and brokenhearted. Chapter 2, verse 2. Not only was Nehemiah sad and brokenhearted, but chapter 2, verse 3 said he acted. Is that what you say, Jonathan?
And said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad, when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire?
Now, when we read some more about Persia and the history of Persia, you know that this was really a very brave act on the part of Nehemiah. To approach the king of Persia in this kind of a tone and attitude was saying that you're ready for death. Remember Esther? When they said to Esther, going to the king, she said, no, you can't just go to the king, sir. But after much persuasion, she said, well, I'm going to pray. If I perish, I perish. Because one of the consequences to go to the king and announce, to approach the king as a Jew, to a Persian, was likely to lose your life. Nehemiah, it seemed at that point, really never cared. You know, I have some friends, when you talk to them sometimes, certain things happen, you know, the other day, they were talking about a missing child, and one man was saying it to a theme son, boy, anything or anything, you know. It means that whatever happened, happened. You know, business. I get the sense from Nehemiah that right now my sorrows are such that the kingly, the royal responsibility is not so heavy. So Nehemiah, interestingly, when Nehemiah first heard the news, he heard the news in the month of Chislev. But this discussion with the king happened in the month of Nisan. When I look at the calendar, that was some 4 or 5 months away. But when Nehemiah approached the king, and the king says to him, what you want? Interestingly, Nehemiah was ready to do what? To give him a list of things. Let's read chapter 2, verse 6 to 9.
And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, for how long shall the journey be?
For how long shall the journey be?
And when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time.
Would you agree with me that obviously Nehemiah had a planned time? He was able to do what? To set him a time. There was no guessing, boy, I'm not sure, you know, how long it will take, I don't know. As a matter of fact, my observation, my conclusion that he was prepared is going to think, I think, be bolstered by what he says next. Continue reading.
Moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let the letters be given me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come into Judah.
Alright, so one, I'm praying for that he can get safe passage. And him obviously must have a route that you can say, these are the kings I need letters to give me safe passage. That means you know which way you're going to Jerusalem. Continue.
And a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates for the palace, which appertained to the house.
What is interesting here is that he wants timber for a specific part of the building, for the gates of the palace. So Nehemiah never just want timber. I am assuming now that he would have had an idea, done some research, how much gates. But obviously, he doesn't just want timber. He wants timber for the gates. This is the kind of preparedness that Nehemiah is exhibiting to us, that, hey, I consider this thing, timber for the gates of the palace and
for the wall of the city,
mm-hmm.
and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me.
Alright, so Nehemiah was prepared. What is interesting also, let's see what happened when Nehemiah get to the city. Chapter 2, 15 to 16.
Then went I up in the night by the brook, and viewed the wall, and turned back, and entered by the gate of the valley, and so returned. And the rulers knew not whither I went, or what I did. Neither had I as yet told it to the Jews, nor to the priests, nor to the nobles, nor to the rulers, nor to the rest that did the work.
So Nehemiah, when he got there, by night, he went and surveyed the city to look to the extent of what really is the damage. Do we see a sense of deliberateness, a sense of planning, a sense of determination, a sense of focus? That is what I am getting from this. Let us look now at, chapter 2, verse 10.
When Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah, the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it, it grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days.
Alright, you can hold it. So there was, immediately there was what? Opposition. It's funny enough, when I researched the meaning of these names, like Sanballat, which means a secret enemy. And the Tobiah is a servant of those who are our secret enemies. And then the Ammonites. Who are the Ammonites? We remember the Ammonites, Genesis chapter 18, with Lot and his two daughters, that they got him drunk. And then, under the drunkenness, had sex with him. And guess what? One of the children that came is Ammon, the father of the Ammonites. These are the people who are opposing, hear now, the work of God. Now, let us look at chapter 4, verse 1 to 3. So this now is that right now they are just upset. As a matter of fact, it says, it grieved them exceedingly. Then it really vexed that somebody's come to seek out the welfare of the children of Israel. Very vexed. But that is just vexation. No. Let's read chapter 4, 1 to 3.
But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews.
So, not just indignation now. But you begin to do what? Remember now, you know, if you're just angry, then you take passive opposition. But now you begin to mock, you take what? Active opposition. You begin now to attempt to discourage the work. That was what? 4:17? Where are you? 4:1. Continue. 1 to 3.
And he spake before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, what do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned? Now Tobiah the Ammonite was by him, and he said, even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall.
Can you imagine that? I said, all of this labor you put in to build a strong fortress, if a fox go up on it, it'll tear down. I mean, after a while, if you don't mind, and remember the company that's there now, the army is there. It's not just a few people. It's a great multitude, and this is the kind of influential person that's speaking. And so no matter what them do, it will come to naught. If a fox go up on the wall, it tear down. Imagine the discouragement. Continue.
Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head. And give them for a prey in the land of captivity. And cover not their iniquity, and let not their sin be blotted out from before thee.
So Nehemiah is talking. Let's go to 4:11.
And our adversary said, they shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them, and slay them, and cause the work to cease. And it came to pass, that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, for all places whence ye shall return.
Alright, so what we have here, Sir Jonathan, is that they plan now to infiltrate the workers. This word not spelled right, no. It's sabotage. If you see it, it's sabotage. The rest of it will come. They plan to infiltrate the work. So they try to mock them. They try to discourage them. Now they're trying to infiltrate and to get into the midst of the workforce to destruct them. That didn't work. Let's go 4:13.
Therefore sit I in the lower places behind the wall, and on the higher places, I even set the people after their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows.
17.
They which builded on the wall, and they that bear burdens, with those that laid it, every one with one of his hands wrought in the work, and with the other hand held a weapon.
So what we find is that when everything didn't work, then we had outright war during the building. They had to be building with one hand, and one hand have the weapon in it. Because guess what? They had to be defending themselves while building the wall. You know, when my mother was my mother or my father? I think it's my mother. When the gentleman was asked to build the grave, this hand no work, you know. This hand have a rumbuckle. This is the one hand that mixed the mortar. Take up the block, everything. This a hand of the room. And we watch him, you know, one solid quart. And him have him cup on the top of the and him. Gee. Every time I read this passage, I think about him. This hand hold the room. It's the Jews. This hand is, or whichever hand is working, the other hand had to hold the sword because you had to be defending yourself. Now, there is of interest to us that Nehemiah is concerned about Jerusalem. Nehemiah, because it's the city of peace, God's dwelling place, God's tabernacle, Nehemiah felt deep sorrow, felt the need to do what? To act. It's not that boy is enough to be had to act. Obviously, a lot of planning went into, a lot of thinking went into, that when it is that he was asked, what do you want, he was ready to say what he needed. Went and he surveyed the issue. Now that he got his time, his effort is fully focused on it, surveyed the place. Naturally, there's opposition. People are angry at first. Mental opposition, they begin to want to sabotage. And when that don't work, outright war. But in all of that, they continued. They continued. And so, what we have in chapter 6, verse 15, is joyful to us. Chapter 6, verse 15 says,
so the wall was finished.
That's all I want, Jonathan. So the wall was finished. The wall was finished. Now, wonderful story, isn't it? Wonderful story. So, let's say this is our Jerusalem wall. You know, look up, that's a broke down, and this a broke down, and some might broke down this one. Like we said, that is all that is left. With your permission, I'd like to use this story to talk about us here in the church. What about us? That we build up the city of peace, God's dwelling place. Read again for me Luke. Luke chapter 7, 31 and 32.
And the Lord said, whereunto then shall I liken the men of this generation? And to what are they like? They are like unto children sitting in the marketplace and calling one to another and saying, "We have piped unto you, and ye have not danced. We have mourned to you, and ye have not wept."
I give you the wrong one, Jonathan. I'm sorry. Let us go to 1 Corinthians 3, 16 to 17. Right, and since Brother Webb is here, I can beg him Ephesians 2, verse 19.
Know ye not that ye are the temple of God?
Alright, that's the one. So let's go again now. So what we find is that Nehemiah is expressing a genuine concern for Jerusalem. Weeping, mourning, fasting, planning, with an intent to have the walls repaired. And our question is, why Jerusalem, Nehemiah? Because it is the city of peace. It is God's dwelling place, the tabernacle. That is why Nehemiah felt what? Deep sorrow. Sorrow that pushed him not just to feel the sorrow, but to do what? To act and to prepare himself. To go and to do what? He says to the king that he needs to go and what? Rebuild. Now, Nehemiah was so prepared that he could tell the king where he wants letters for safe passage, for timber. And so we know that he could also set a time when he would do the work. Nehemiah went, he surveyed the land, and from that survey, could not meet head on the opposition that started with just what? That opposition started with just being sad or vexed that he was rebuilding. Then it went to mental opposition, infiltration and sabotage, and ultimately war, to the point where he had to be rebuilding with one hand and be defending with the other. That was Nehemiah's situation. How does it apply to us? Well, let's say this is our Jerusalem, right here at Patrick City. And let's say that we are going to follow the Bible. And what it says now? We are the what?
The temple of God.
So we are the temple of God. God's dwelling. We agree? You don't have to agree with me. Corinthians, no, sir? We are the temple of God. And what else?
And that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you.
God dwelleth where? In us. So, if we have Michael Myrie here, sir, and we have Karen Fisher here, sir, and we have and we have the new sister Damai right here, so, and then Brother Webb in the here, so, and give me two more, sister Myrie here, so, and who else? Brother Webb, Ryan Webb here, so, down at the back. So, warm to them people. Them places where the wall missing. Warm to them people. Obviously, the wall have some breaches. Are we concerned? Are we in deep sorrow? Are we prepared to act? Have we done any research? Are we ready to accept that we're going to meet some opposition in doing what? In repairing the breach of the wall. So we are the temple. Now, it's interesting that here it is that Nehemiah, all the way in Shushan, had deep concern for what was happening in Jerusalem. Deep concern for the people of Jerusalem. Now remember now that these people were once in Jerusalem. True? And Nebuchadnezzar came and took them captive. These our brethren, where we don't sit in the wall, yes, sir, was once with us. They no longer with us. They have been taken what? Captive. Where is our deep sorrow? I'm talking about our people we call backsliders. People we don't see. Do we have the deep sorrow? Now, Ephesians 2 verse 19 says what?
Now therefore, we are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God.
They are fellow. F-E-L-L-O-W. Fellow citizens. But they're not here. They're not here. Truth be told, how often we think about them. I know Brother Richard, I don't remember last name, Richard Brown, has been saying to me for some weeks now, we don't even publish the names of the people, the backsliders, or those we haven't seen in the bulletin. Is there any active ministry? Is there any what are we doing about it? Sorry, he's not here because he's part and parcel of why this thing keeps in my head. What are we doing about it? And that is, we're saying, we know that they're not here. But, truthfully, besides that, are we feeling any deep sorrow? Are we looking and saying that the wall of the temple of the city is broken down and needs to be repaired? I leave that with you. I mean, I think I have not actively thought about it enough. But you see, we have to realize that we have to make a decision. We have to act. Either we are going to say, we will hear this matter another time, or we are going to say, we are going to go after, we are going to rebuild. Now, how we do that is what I call stage two. Because if you haven't decided that you're going to do it, it don't matter. But if we decide, then we can begin to rebuild and to close the breaches of the city, the dwelling place of Almighty God. Now, Nehemiah had to send letters. So he's concerned. So he sent letters. And he's seeking passage, safe passage, so that he can get to Jerusalem to start the process. I'm saying to us that we will also need, after we have researched, to be finding a way to get to those persons in wherever they are, so that we can begin to encourage them, to provoke them, to come back to the fold, to rebuild this place here. We together, which is a church in this area, we have to now begin to seek that out. We have to survey. Maybe we have to find out, in my bench, who is missing? Who I haven't seen for so long? Maybe we need to check with people like Brother Myron says, I haven't seen so and so in such a time. Is there an effort to reach this person? Can you guide me then in how best to go after this person? You see, we can't just get up, and we have to be careful. Nehemiah, in his recognition, in his response, being response, Nehemiah just get up and move. There is a method. There is a way to go about doing this business, and a respect for order and authority. And we need to recognize the need for that, and now in a organized, in a constructive way, go after our targeted person. Is it the person in my bench? Is it the person in my quadrant? Is it the person I know? Who is it that I'm going to go after? We need also to ensure that, guess what? We are ready for what? Opposition. If we notice the stage of opposition that met Nehemiah. First, they were exceedingly vexed. Vexed at what? I mean, every time I read it, it gets me. It says, the Ammonite heard of it. It grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. To seek the welfare of the children of Israel. When we go after those who have left the fold, are we seeking their welfare? We don't have to answer that. We know that. Your best place, or if you wish to fare well in this life and the life to come, you better be anchored in Jesus Christ. We know that that is their welfare. So, you see, it is now that Nehemiah, these people were angry that somebody was seeking the welfare of these people. Can we imagine that we'll meet that kind of opposition? We don't have to stretch the imagination very far. The fact that you are coming. Boy, my son not living a life yet. You know, I'm driving in a church. Have we met that? We have met that. You might say another person, all you want to do is get people money to get to the pastor. Have we met that? We have met that. We have people who tell you that do what you want to do is take with them one relaxed day. We have met that. I mean, I'm telling you what I have met. I don't know. I'm sure. So, the idea, and these are mild, the idea that you are coming to talk about Christ, Christianity, and the church. People don't, they are angry that you have the audacity to come and say that. We have that. But Nehemiah's opposition moved from that. And moved now to what? A mental state. What him say? Him say, even if a fox go up on the wall, he go and drop them. Even if no matter, even if God come and call that the one, he more backslide. Have you heard that? Nobody not hear that yet? That it, no matter even if God come for this one. Him in a church. And immediately a person begins to think, boy, maybe this one, maybe you're not going to make it for true. A man might say to you, boy, based on where this man has lived, he can't go to church. Too much of this surrounding. Mental. And then we get outright war. I mean, can I tell you something? I was shocked to read in the passage that those who opposed Nehemiah's building were the Ammonites. Those who are born out of what? Is incestuous relations. That's what we call it. Father and daughter. The people who has mindset is set like that. Yes. Who else? The Arabs. Are we still being beset by the Arabs today? Yes. We also had what? The Samaritans. Who are the Samaritans? The people what? Of corrupt religion, the mixed, the denominate. Do we have that still today? We still have that. So when we talk about Christianity and talk about one true church and talking about worshiping God because worship is regulated, no women preaching, no music, you're going to have a problem. What is interesting is that Nehemiah says, some of the people, while they attempt to rebuild, while we go after those who are backslidden, while we sit down in different communities, in the homes, at the bus stop, wherever, trying to recapture them, trying to encourage them, to provoke them, we better be armed with this word of God. What is that? With the word of God. You can be sure that you're going to have some people that you're going to have to be fighting on. I mean, Cheryl, I'm going to say, Corville, and we sat in the park with this gentleman, and we saw some people coming around, and we're glad to say more people are coming, Cheryl is. And then, when we come to and to be quieting all of these people, everything that you say on this side, you have to knock it out around the block. We're going to have the open war. But this will tell us, look here. But Mr. the Brethren said, anything, anything. We are going after to rebuild Jerusalem because, guess what? We can't allow the devil to snatch these people. We need to repair these breaches. So when we go for them, we can get the solid wall. Now let me tell you something. It is important for us in as much as those out, to have this solid wall around us. Because it is Ecclesiastes, I think it is, tells us that when we tell the wicked, we will what? Save our soul. We need to realize that our salvation depends on how much we keep our brother and sister. This solid wall, this building, this church here protects us. Stop for a moment. We sit down by and we watch people drift out. And when you look around, 15 of us left. Is it going to be harder for us to worship here? Is it going to be harder for us to convince this community? Is it going to be harder for us to provoke each other to love and good works? Who we think we're fighting against? It's not the people in the community. It's Satan's active force chiseling away at us, discouraging us. So little by little, we have the same kind of discouragement where people pass and say, 15 now, a big old Billy, might as well lock you up and go on the yard. 2-3 more say, actually, no, me, I go worship with Independent City. More people over there. So we're down to 12. And next week, Sunday, we're still inside there. Active. It is important that we do what? We maintain the wall. Important. We don't just sit down and watch it go by and say, It's important that we also look at, it's going to take some work. Let's look at chapter 4, verse 23.
So neither I, nor my brethren, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us put off our clothes, saving that everyone put them off for washing.
Nehemiah said they have not changed clothes. As a matter of fact, the verse before that, 2 or 3 verses, tell us that they didn't even go home. They stayed in the city to guard. Have on the same sweat, imagine. Imagine carrying, we walk out the wall of New Haven, a hand or track. And then we walk out the wall of Patrick City. And then for 2-3 days, you know, same clothes. Working at it. Alright, so this time now we're going to look. We get a register from Michael and said, these are the people who got baptized over the last 4 years. Who we not see? And Fabian take 10, and Michael take 10, and somebody take 2, 3, 4. And we at it. Remember, you know, we have work for God. Families to look after, our own personal things to deal with. But we decide to look here for the next 2 weeks, for the next week, 3 days. This is our focus. We're going after those breaches in the wall. Where are they? If for nothing else, it's to take away their reproach to say nobody came. Even for nothing else. But what we're really going for is so that we can get back this solid structure. Man said, look here, just to wash it. Then I change clothes, not a pretty thing. It's hard work, sweat, tears, and that is not the focus. We don't have time to say, but they must be in the same clothes yesterday. No, we are after what? We are after the souls of our brothers and sisters because we want to repair the breach. Interestingly, I think, whilst we have the sword of the Spirit, if open war is upon us, this is my own interpretation, so you can choose to take it or not. The man who has nothing doing but just wielding the sword has great difficulty. I ask you that, Sir Fabian. Imagine that you have a machete chopped down a tree. You don't do nothing else but chop the tree. Now, Fabian is an office man. So I'm chopping at him, chopping at him, hand a corner. Just to chop the tree with no other distraction. I'm going to have to extend some effort. Imagine now that Fabian is chopping and watching. It's going to take some what? Some serious skill. Because the people you're looking for are not friends. Them coming to kill you. I'm saying to us that if you have the sword of the Spirit, normally the word of it dwell in your house. Richly so you can wield the sword. Imagine now if you're in a situation like that. You better be better prepared with the word that you can both defend and build you must have that kind of skill. If we are going to go after to repair the breaches in the world, we better understand that it's going to take some serious effort. Let me ask Sir Fabian how much time I have left. I have one more point. How much? 5 minutes? All right, let's have it done. Tell me now. One last point. Nehemiah acted. And that's what I want to end on. If you check any of us in here, we are aware that is, we are the temple of God. All of us know that. No story about that. The meeting place, we know that. Some of us have sorrow, and I suspect some have deep sorrow about the fact that, boy, a long time you know see brother so and so. A long time you know see sister so and so. Boy, imagine that sister they just walk from the church. Boy, I will shake with her and say, boy, Jesus, boy. And the person is so faithful. And look how the devil just. Yes, we have concern. Some of us are prepared. Some of us have done the survey and can tell you how many people that used to sit down in this part are not here. Some of us are strong. And if we have another one with us, we beat any opposition. But what are we doing? Thank you.